Hi guys, Jack Spirko here with a special Saturday edition of the Survival Podcast. Recently, I was contacted by a young guy named Lane Cooper. Lane is 14 years old and is working on a budding career as a podcaster himself and doing great things for liberty as a young man. He asked if he could come on and interview me, and I thought I'd run this as just a special standalone edition. So here we go. Take it away, Lane.
Hello, my fellow preppers and patriots. What is up? It is Lane here. Today I'm interviewing Jack Spirko from the Survival Podcast. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hey, Lane. Well, thanks for having me on your show, man. And I think it's awesome what you're doing at your age. So just let me say that starting out. My name is Jack Spirko. As you said, I'm the host of the Survival Podcast. I've run that show now for a little over 8 years. And started it actually in my car. I had the typical... successful life as far as most Americans are concerned. I was an owner of a company, a partner, and several others, and I drove about 55 miles to work each day and then back the same distance. And I got tired of listening to talk radio, and at the same time, we had a client for one of my companies that wanted a podcast. We had won the job, but no one in the company actually knew how to set up the podcast feeds and things like that. Again, this is 8 years ago. It wasn't as known as it is today. It was kind of a new thing. So I set up my own podcast just to actually figure out the technology so we could deliver it to a customer. And I went into one of my favorite topics, which is preparedness and a very holistic concept of preparedness. Everything from financial management to producing your own food to individual liberty and self-reliance and self-sufficiency. Preparedness for the most basic things like losing a job or having a storm or your power going out, all the way to preparing for far more dramatic events. And I did that show for about 6 months in the car, and at the end of that year, I'd gotten up to about 2,000 people listening to it and thought, well, you know what, if that many people will listen to this just being a hobby, if I take it seriously, maybe we could grow it into something. So I took that next year and decided if I could get it up to, you know, 30, 40,000 people by the end of that next year, I could probably put a revenue model in it. And I did that and walked away from my job, my ownership in a company, everything a year and a half into it. And I've done nothing else ever since. And it's probably the smartest thing I ever did. Unlike you that still have a lot of years ahead of you, I'm in my mid-40s. You start to get a little bit more in touch with your mortality at that point. And I think by 50, if I would have stayed in that world, I would have had a heart attack. It's been kind of the biggest blessing in the world to focus on the things that really matter, and my show has really been all about that and helping other people find that for themselves.
What were you like in school?
What was I like in school? Okay. I would say it depends when. Up until about my high school years, I was kind of an introvert. I had friends, but not a lot. I wasn't really very charismatic or anything like that. It's a suspicion that I actually have a condition known as Asperger's, though it's never been actually diagnosed. It's a very mild form of autism, and I think that was somewhat of an inhibitor for me as a child. But when I was getting ready to go into high school, we actually moved, and I had a summer kind of living the way I'd always wanted to, with uncles that hunted and fished and things like that, and I hung around with a lot more adults than I had up until that point. And by the time I entered high school, it was kind of like I was a different person. I fit in a lot better. I had a lot more friends. But I actually hated school. I don't mean I hated going. I hated the agenda of school, the wasted time in school. There were subjects that I liked, so I could pick the textbook up and read it and probably could have aced every test that I was ever going to take for the next year almost immediately. And there were subjects that I wasn't interested in that I just couldn't bring myself to really study. So I was the guy that had A's all in, you know, half of my classes and ended up having D's, just doing enough work to get by in the other ones. And school was, from an academic standpoint, something I just kind of got through. And I think it's probably why I joined the Army after I got out of high school. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. So it was an interesting life experience, I guess, for me. And I don't totally put school down. You're in school, and I think people should make the most they can out of it, but I do think our current educational system is trying to make something fit everybody as though everybody's the same, and we have kids that are dramatically different. In fact, in college, we have adults that are dramatically different that would learn better with different pathways through education.
How can you describe your success?
I don't know, ongoing, hopefully. A lot of people think that, like, once you get to a point where you're what other people consider successful, that you've kind of done it. And I think if you get there yourself, your ego needs to be put in check. Having spent, 30 years of my life in business before doing this kind of as a sole proprietor type of thing, I've seen a lot of people get really, really successful in business. And I mean, I know one former partner that I worked with who had a company at one time that was doing $65 million a year. He won the Branson Award in Great Britain 2 years in a row. To this day, it's the only company that ever did that. And today, that company is a fraction of the size that it was. And I think that can happen to anybody. So I think that success is really about always feeling that while there's time to rest, there's time to recharge, there's time to take a break, there's time to take a vacation, there's time to just enjoy life, you're never as good as you can be. And the minute you think that, well, I'm a success, you've probably pinnacled and you are now heading toward decline. There's no static in life. You're either moving towards something or life will move you away from it. And that's a very hard lesson to learn. And I've seen really smart people let arrogance overcome them and believe that my success is permanent. So I would describe my success as hopefully ongoing and not anywhere near what it needs to be to fulfill my goals in life.
What is the Member Support Brigade?
Member Support Brigade was how I actually took a podcast and made it pay my bills. So about that, first year into it, by the end of that 6 months anyway, at the end of that, calendar year, because I started the show in late June, I decided, well, with a couple thousand people listening, I'd probably start taking some sponsors. I had people that wanted to sponsor the show, and they were all smaller businesses, and I ended up taking a couple in, and it worked out. And then real quickly, we completely filled out as many as I was willing to take. I figured with 12 sponsors, if I gave two people a show mention every day, and I do a five-day-a-week show, that I could have like 1 week off every fourth week for somebody, and otherwise everybody gets a weekly show mention. And taking any more would either make my show too commercial, or it would do a disservice to the advertiser paying good money to only be mentioned once or twice a month. So I capped it, and then I was like, okay, well, this is making $20,000, $25,000 a year for me. That's not terrible, and if you're, a young person, that's probably what you're making if you're working minimum wage or part-time or something like that. But as someone that was, in my 30s at that point, it didn't pay my bills. It didn't give me the opportunity to walk away, which is what I decided I wanted to do. So I looked at this, and I kept getting people saying, can we sponsor the show? Can we sponsor the show? And as it was growing, I had two choices. I could either raise my advertising rates to the point where the people that I had couldn't afford me anymore because they were small companies. And I didn't think that was right because they were people that believed in what I was doing early on. Or I could find another way to monetize the show that was a win-win. And if you want to be in business, especially you young folks out there, so much opportunity today. If you can set up a situation where there's a three-party win, in other words, I win, somebody else wins, and my customer wins all at the same time, then you have a home run. So what I did is I started taking all of the sponsors I already had, and all the people who were asking to become sponsors that weren't yet, and said, would you like the opportunity to give a discount in return for more business to some of my best customers? And the answer to that from any smart business person is, well, yes, I would. So I set up the Member Support Brigade, and the way that I sell that is it costs about 18.3 cents an episode, if you factor it out over the year, to support the show for $50 a year. And then there's all these companies that you get discounts to. And the companies I'm giving discounts to for my audience are the type of people that they're going to be buying from anyway. Food storage equipment, long-term storage food, tactical equipment, unit seeds, plants, trees, all of the things that we talk about for living that better life. And even some stuff that's more consumer level. We have a coffee company that does outstanding coffee that does discounts. We have one called EcoSense that pitch to the guys that you can finally sell your wife on while you have this $50 thing to listen to this crazy guy talk on the computer all the time. And that's worked out really well because what happens is my members join, and if they use four or five even of those discounts over that next year, their membership paid for itself. So they get to support the show. They get their money back. And people that buy a lot of stuff in this world, they end up making a couple hundred dollars a year off it. And then my supporting vendors actually get business they wouldn't otherwise have. In the business world, we call that incremental revenue. And it's the difference between a business's success and a major success. And for some of our supporters, that one channel now with about 7,000 members has become their single biggest individual source of revenue. And I'm not saying everybody should do that exact business model. In fact, it can't work for everybody. But that template of creating a situation where you have multiple parties that all feel that they've gotten more value than they've put in, that's the winning formula for success in business.
What advice can you give to an aspiring podcaster?
Do it and keep doing it. Don't get obsessed with audio quality, though it's important, but it's not as important as a lot of people in podcasting make it out to be. I know podcasters that have $5,000 to $10,000 in audio studio set up with foam all on their walls and stuff like that, and they've never made a dollar podcasting. And if somebody's doing it for a hobby, like they had a dream, all they ever wanted to be was a radio guy, but this is just their thing they do, like for me going out and fly fishing or something is, then that's fine. If that's what, you know, everybody can have an expensive hobby if they want to have one and can afford it if they want to. But if you actually want it to be something that's more of a profession, you have to focus on the quality of the content over the quality of the production value. Because if you get the content quality where it needs to be, you have all day and a week, right, to worry about improving your audio quality to the point where your audience finds that it's acceptable to them. So when I started in my car, obviously, there was some background noise and road noise, and when it would rain, there was, you know, and you can't get rid of that, but it was a pretty forgiving audience because they knew the way that I was doing the show. When I moved into a studio environment and went full-time with it, I got a nice condenser mic, but it's a $100 microphone. And to this day, I use that microphone as a Samsung CO1U, USB condenser mic. I use Audacity to record. When I'm recording an interview like we're doing today, I use Skype and Skype Recorder. I think Skype Recorder is $29 a year. And I use Vegas to edit. Now, Vegas is an expensive program, but I had it for other reasons. Otherwise, I would use one of the lower cost editing programs, and I focus on frequency and quality of content. So by frequency, I do a daily show. Not everybody can do that. But if you're going to say you're going to do a weekly show, you don't do a weekly show 3 weeks out of the month. You do a weekly show 4.34 weeks, because that's how many weeks are in a month. So 4.34 average per month. You never miss those frequencies, especially if you back off to weekly. There's times now where I'll take a vacation and I'll be gone for a week. And people can listen to past stuff and all. But if I was doing a weekly show and I was going to be gone for a week or two, I'd just pre-record a couple of them and have them in the can and ready to go. You have to understand that we've reached a point with so much content and so much opportunity to spend money online today for products, services, and otherwise, that the user today that's using the internet to gather content and material has actually gotten to a point where the hardest thing to get them to spend with you is not their money, but their time. Because if you want to spend money, you can go to Amazon one click and buy a $100 or a $1,000 product, and it's done and it's over and it shows up, and you have the product for the rest of your life. If you hire somebody to provide a service for you, you give them money, they come, they do it, and they go away. If you want somebody to pay attention to your blog, your podcast, anything that's content-driven, and let's say you're doing a one-hour show a day, you're asking that person to spend an hour of their time with you. And the only way that they'll do that is if you've made a commitment, I will be here one day a week or 2 days a week or 5 days a week or whatever it is, and they can expect that that will occur, then they become engaged with you and they'll stick with you and they'll stay with you. I would also say don't try to control everything. My show has bifurcated and trifurcated and quadricated into all these little sub-communities. We have a forum that I don't even touch or mess with. I have moderators that run it, and I let it alone. We have multiple Facebook groups. I don't try to control my brand everywhere that it goes. This is the viral effect that all these big companies are trying to make happen, and as soon as somebody goes out and sets up a page about them, they start freaking out about their brand not being under their control, and they want to control it. And then they come to you when I used to be in consulting and say, how do we get viral marketing? And my honest response to several people like that has been, your pattern of behavior shows me that you're too stupid to comprehend what I would have to tell you, and I can't take you as a customer because you can't control something and have it be viral. So hold on to what you're doing loosely and let people promote it for you if they're willing to do so. That's one of the biggest things I see holding back, not just podcasters, but most companies out there. They want complete control every time their name is used, but that they, yet they want, you know, fanboys and fangirls telling the world about them. It doesn't work that way. It's not that type of thing. You have the piece that you actually control. You call that your sphere of control. So that's your site. That's the comments on your site. That's the content on your show, et cetera. And as you come outside of that sphere, you get into a point where you have a little bit of interaction with people, but you're going to have to guard your time as you become a success. And then you come out to the larger sphere where you have all these peripheral things going that are exposing the world to what you're doing, and some of it's positive and some of it's negative. And so my last piece of advice is when someone makes an incorrect, inaccurate, negative attack on you within your sphere of control, respond to it, do it as best you can, and if they continue it, ban them and get rid of them. You don't have time for it. If they do it out in the periphery and maybe you make a single response, if they do it way out in the areas that you don't control, all that means is you've reached the point where you're impacting so many lives positively that you now have people whose only purpose in life is to dislike you. Congratulate yourself, pat yourself on the back. That means you've reached a very high level of success, and keep doing what you're doing and don't worry about them.
Do you have any big projects coming up?
Probably too many. There's another piece of advice. Be careful how much you do. As you become successful at some of this stuff, people are real quick to help you out or want to be involved with you in doing more things. So over the years, I think I've spread myself a little bit too thin here and there, but yet it's in my DNA to be doing new things. So one of the projects that we're working on right now, I'm working with two gentlemen. One has been keeping quail in rack-style systems now for about 5 years. And out of a single car garage is producing about 2,000 meat birds and 20,000 eggs a year, again, out of a single car garage, and his neighbor didn't even know they were there. That said, caging in the quail world has some real limitations. I'm not a big fan of things that are like CAFOs where we stack too many animals into a place, and I think animals should be able to go inside, outside, and actually, you know, be animals. So we're trying to develop kind of a hybrid cage system that would allow those standard rack quail cages to be simply removed by their keeper and put outside like a tractor, yet when weather calls for it, or in urban environments, a lot of people can't keep livestock. So when, you know, kind of a little bit of secrecy is necessary, they can just go back in. And we're also working in that same world on developing a system that is designed for 100% tractoring, that will be a lot, you know, something you buy and you have for the rest of your life. And then we're doing a larger scale system there with quail right on my property. It's more of an aviary system that's going to allow us to pasture quail. So that's like one thing that we have going on. I launched a company called Perma Ethos about 2 years ago, where we teach people permaculture and permaculture skills. We're hoping this first quarter of this year to launch a new webinar series program where we'll have experts coming in about once or twice a week, teaching people different aspects of homesteading, self-sufficiency, animal husbandry, growing their own food, preserving their own food, things like that. And God knows what we'll do next, honestly. But I am actually right now trying to dial it back a little bit and not spread myself too thin, because what you find out as you get out of working 80 hours a week for someone else, you end up working 90 hours a week for yourself. And that's not really good for your quality of life. You need to kind of balance a work ethic with an ethic toward recreation and actually being there for your family.
How can people find your podcasts?
All you have to do is go to thesurvivalpodcast.com or thesurvivalpodcast.com if you say the or the, it's up to you. And I actually have a shortcut, especially for people on their phones, TSPC, tspc.co, not com, .co. That'll just forward you over to the site. Once you get there, you can find everything that I'm doing and connect with me on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, our individual groups. You can find our Zello chat group, our forum, all different types of ways, not just to connect with me, but other members of our community and our sub-communities. And if you use iTunes and you use the podcast app, you can just subscribe there. I'm on Stitcher Radio. I'm on Google Play. I'm just about everywhere. If you just search for the Survival Podcast, you'll find all different ways to connect with me.
Is there anything else you would like to add before we end it?
One that I would like to add that I kind of said at the beginning, I'm really encouraged with what you're doing, Lane. I think we need more young people like yourself getting out there and getting things done. And what I'll kind of say is we've taught young people today that, like, okay, you need to go to school, you need to grow up, you need to do this, and then after you get a certain number of pieces of paper behind you, then you go get a job. The problem with that is we have a lot of young people, 24, 25 years old, with a degree in hand, running around asking for a job, and they've never actually done anything in their life as far as a day's work. Now, they may have worked at home for chores or something, but what I mean is they've never gotten any actual relevant experience. And I would say that if you came to me back when I used to hire people, and you had a degree and you had experience, even if it was waiting tables or stocking shelves, you were more valuable to me than somebody with a degree with a little bit better grades who didn't have any experience. But if you came to me and I said, well, what's your background? And you said, well, when I was 14 years old, I started a podcast. I ran that for a couple of years. Maybe I did some affiliate marketing, whatever. I don't care what it is. Then you have an actual entrepreneurial past. Well, your value to me just went through the roof that if you know what you're doing, or you seem highly trainable and you seem like you really are excited about the job, I would probably hire you over someone that had a degree, even if they had regular employment experience. Because the reality today is there is so much opportunity with the internet. When I was your age in the early 1980s, you know, when we wanted to do something entrepreneurial, maybe we sold baseball cards or something like that to people in town. There was no real way to scale what we were trying to do as kids if we had that entrepreneurial bent. And then the other thing is, it doesn't always have to be about business either. I'm a very business-centric person because I believe if you follow your passion and do what you believe is right, you're going to be able to find a way to make a living from it. I really believe that, especially today, because there's so many tools. But there's also a case just for making a difference. If you're encouraging people to do good things in the world, there's no reason a 14-year-old or a 15-year-old or a 10-year-old, for that matter, with a little bit of understanding of technology, can't be influencing people. And some people might look at what a young person's doing and say, oh, that's nice, and give them a pass because they're a kid. Not me. I expect if you're going to do something, you're going to do it with some meaning. But you don't have to have the numbers that someone that's been doing it for 8 years does to make a difference. If you change one person's life a year for the next 10 years, you'll have done more than most people will ever do in their lives in total. And that's what this type of communication is really all about, because let me tell you, I've seen it come back to me with people that you never knew heard a word you said, and they heard one sentence one day 5 years ago, and they changed their life forever. I had a lady stand in front of me one time that was in her 60s, and she was in tears, and I hugged her because she had told me she heard something I said. She completely readjusted her finances, and 2 years later, she was put out of a career 5 years before her retirement, and she was comfortable in an early retirement where she would have been broke had she not heard those words. And I think it's important that people in your age bracket realize, just because you're younger, just because you might walk into a room and talk and a bunch of adults don't listen to you because you're a kid, doesn't mean you can't find your identity and find your voice through some means and spread it beyond that localized thing. Because, especially guys your age, it's no different for adults. You think it is because we're bigger and we talk louder. But in the end, the closer you are to somebody, a lot of times the less they're willing to listen to you about something they disagree with you about. When you can actually reach people that you don't have such an attachment to. Like your parents will never take your advice on money, Lane, because they powdered your butt when you were a baby. They just won't do it. They will not listen to you about money unless there's a unique situation there. So use the tools of today, young folks, and reach beyond that sphere that just kind of says, oh, well, when he gets older, we'll listen to him. Because there's people that will listen to you today.
Okay, well, thank you all for watching. And, yeah, bye.